Hi, I'm Haley Sue Robinson with the City of Pueblo. Come take a ride with Zero Fare for Better Air, where bus fares are free for June, July, and August on all Pueblo Transit and City Lift rides. Riding Pueblo Transit is easy and convenient with 12 routes throughout the city. All bus schedules are kept up to date on the city's website at www.pueblo.us. Visit Pueblo Transit online or come take a ride for yourself, starting at the Transit Center, located at 123 Court Street.
Hello and welcome to the Voices of Pueblo, brought to you by the Pueblo Star Journal. I'm Ben Kaysen here with Jimmy Dunn, a climbing legend. Jimmy, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you very much for the intro. Appreciate it. It's good to be here. It's a great little newspaper you got going here, and glad to be here.
Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come down and chat. And I think this is one of the cool stories for me to be able to chat about, because I've been hearing the buzz that you were in town these last couple months. So we've been kind of prepping out articles, and so Gregory has been telling me, you know, we've got someone in town that's done a ton of climbing. He's got all these stories, and so I've been kind of digging into your story, you know, over these last few weeks, getting prepped up. And man, I gotta say, I'm honored to be in here with you. So thank you so much for coming.
You may know more about me than I know about you.
I doubt that.
Well, I don't know about that. But anyways, yeah. So here we are in Pueblo, and you know, coming to Pueblo was actually an accident. Mm-hmm. We weren't planning on moving here, and I'd driven through Pueblo a million times or more. Always going climbing down in Texas or Arizona or California, zip down 25, and I don't remember ever getting gas in Pueblo, to be honest.
I'd go right through, but
I'd always look at some of the old buildings on the highway. Mm-hmm. I'd say, that's a cool building. Mm-hmm. But I never stopped here. So, and my wife Helen and I, it spent probably close to 10 years in a Volkswagen van, mostly, sometimes a Ford van, old ones, climbing all over the country.
Wow.
And when things changed for various reasons, and she started teaching school, I thought, and getting back into her art, because she has a degree from the Royal School of Art in London, and I thought, well, the best thing I can do is support her like she supported me for 10 years, living like dirtbags, running around the country, having a great time, getting in killer shape. So she was actually wanting to build an art studio in Colorado Springs, build an art garage, do it, you know, from scratch.
Yeah.
And it was just a hassle, you know, with the engineers. It was a fortune. And she was looking for a house in the Black Forest, and that was a disaster. It didn't work out. She's coming home, and she was a little bit bummed out, and she says, this is Zach's story, word for word, pretty much. So she's driving back, and said, I was talking to her, and she said, wait a minute, something came up on my phone. Let me pull over. So she pulled up and called me 10 minutes later. There's this cool place in Pueblo that is really cool sounding. It's got a three-car garage and an RV garage, a couple acres, and it's five bedrooms, and it was not that much. It was like not that much money for
compared to Colorado Springs. And
yeah, exactly. So I said, okay, let's go see it. So she came back, which is like 30 minutes north of the Springs, and she came back, and I said, okay, let's go. So she went from North Dakota Springs to pick me up, and went down here, and I looked at it and said, Helen, let's buy this tomorrow. There was one minor problem. We didn't have any money. But whatever it takes, let's buy this tomorrow.
Wow.
So anyways.
What was it about the place that sold you?
Well, what was really nice was not the house. The house was awesome. It was custom house with tile floors and wood floors and walk-in bathroom, walk-in closets. And I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
But what sold it was the RV garage, the space. Mm-hmm. That was her dream. And the three-car garage, all that space. If it would have been a little teeny little box, she wouldn't care. She wanted the RV garage. She said, "This is my dream."
Wow.
So I just said, "Well," so we put our house up for sale and sold it in 2 days. And we offered the people. I said, "Helen, this is a killer place. It's really beautiful here. We better somebody's going to want this more than we do, and they're going to have a lot more money than us. So let's offer more money. So we offered them $5,000 more.
Nice.
And I said, we got to get this. And we made the sale, and we bought it, and here we are. So it wasn't, we didn't think about it, but now that we're here, it's like incredible. Yeah. We met great people, and Helen Ashley, more about Helen, I guess, in some ways, but what was cool is, because this whole thing of me being here is supporting Helen in her art world, and in 1 year, she has a better connection than she did in 10 years in the spring. She loves it. There's so many interesting people that are really, really fascinating folks, and you know some of them as well as I do. And the other thing is, now I've got my own bedroom and my own office space, because there's 5 bedrooms. And one of the things I am doing here, which I guess I should mention, is I'm writing stories about what I did with my friends for the last 48 years. And if I don't do that, things get forgotten. Details get forgotten.
Yeah.
Like doing a climb that took 3 days, twice, 3 days in a period of like 20 years, then doing it with one rope and no food and 1 quart of water in 9 hours. You know, everything that led up to that.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, being in a 1972 Volkswagen, yellow Volkswagen Bug, AM radio, no FM. It's drizzling out. We're going to go the next morning with one rope, which means, you know, a 2,000-foot climb, which means you can't get down if something goes wrong, because you have one rope. It's drizzling. Getting up 5 times or 8 times at night, listen to the radio, but all we could get was Oklahoma, Kansas, Iowa. Not Denver. This is Black Canyon on the western slope.
Yeah.
We couldn't get Denver. We couldn't get Colorado Springs. We couldn't get Pueblo. We got and every Midwest station called for 100% chance of rain, and it was drizzling. And my friend and I thought, we've been planning this. We're doing it tomorrow, no matter what. Things like that. Yeah, it was pretty crazy, actually, when I look back at and I did it with a great guy. You know, we got to the top in one day, which is planned. So things like that. What led up to it is it interesting? For me, it is, and a lot of people probably would find it kind of fascinating, you know, going on that climb with 1 quart of water, one rope, listen to the AM radio and the Volkswagen Bug, no FM. I'm getting this down. I'm getting it down, the details, and I have a good memory.
Yeah.
I have a better memory for handholds and footholds in climbing than I do for addresses and bank accounts. I don't remember bank accounts or addresses.
That's because you live and breathe it.
But
that's amazing.
And climbing was life.
So what's so magical about it? What got you into it?
Climbing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a crazy question. I mean, 48 years ago, and I don't know if I can answer that. It's dangerous.
Okay.
You could die. You spend all your money. You don't work as hard as you should, although I do have friends that were good climbers that also got a great academic life. Somehow I talk to them about it. I always tell them, I can't believe you could do what you did.
Somehow they balanced it.
And still, yeah. So we talk about that all the time. But for me, it's like just full tilt. And I haven't climbed as much lately, so I'm not on fire for it now. So to ask why I like it, I don't know. Sorry about that.
Interesting.
It's a pretty bad answer, I guess. I should know.
No,
it's pretty exciting. It's great being in killer shape. It's great waking up. In the past, I'm so used to waking up outside, going light. But lately, I haven't been doing that at all. I've been climbing some. The other thing is, down here in Pueblo area, there's some great rock climbing. Which I did a little bit of it 40, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But I'm getting reintroduced to it.
Where are some of those spots that you like going?
Down here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a place I went to a couple times ages ago, one called Newland Creek, which is very beautiful. Another place called Tana Dome. And lately I've been going to some places that are sort of... my friends spent a lot of their life there, 20 years climbing there. And I was invited 20 years ago, But I was doing more things like in Yosemite or the Black Canyon or the desert. So and I figured, well, I've done enough for that. So they're having fun. So I just thought, yeah, that's their deal. Mm. So I didn't tag along. Mm. It was okay with me. And there was like they spent 20 good years of their lives doing this stuff.
Wow.
And I've been jumping on the bandwagon lately, having fun.
Good.
Although I get my butt kicked and everything.
Well, do you mind if I ask, how old are you?
74.
That's incredible that you're still climbing to me.
Well, thanks.
Not that that's old. I'm just saying that.
It is old.
Well, it's just like, when did you start climbing? Do you know how old you were when you started?
It's about 17.
So, yeah, so that's...
a few years.
Yeah, that's 50... oh, my gosh. 55 years.
Something like that.
Incredible.
Well, good math. I'm impressed. My friend
Bob.
Well,
I hope it was right.
My math professor, Bob, would be impressed you got that so quickly. I'm going to ask him the same question. See if,
see if the answer's right. That's what you should do.
You. I am.
See if the answer's right. No, but when you were 17 and you started climbing, why did you start climbing then? What was it like?
Well, yeah. Well, what was it like? It was different than now.
Hmm.
It was, there were a lot less climbers.
Okay.
I was living pretty much on with, in fact, I'm just writing a story about my old cars that I used to drive around in.
Yeah.
Like $50 for this Ford Falcon, $115 for a Chevy Impala 1960,
that's awesome.
$200 for a Buick Wildcat,
mm.
you know, 68, you know, all these cars, like, you know, and the reason I'm writing about this now is one of my friends from Sweden, Peter Lickberg, told me a story when I met him that, you know, he was a nuclear power plant inspector all over the world, but he loved minerals. His life is minerals. And he told me one time he sold his car in college to buy a rock, to buy a mineral.
Interesting.
And all his, I know. And all his a lot of his friends asked him, Peter, how can you sell a car to buy a rock? And his answer is, there's a lot of cars to buy. There's only a few great rocks to buy.
Damn.
And then I was thinking, same thing with climbing. Hmm. There's lots of cars, but if I buy a car for $50, that means and back then, you know, you didn't even make that much money, really.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter who you were. So if you bought a car for $50 and had the rest of your money to go to Yosemite or Zion or wherever, you could climb more and get in better shape. So that was my attitude for years. Now I couldn't do it. You know, it's like no air conditioning, you know, nothing worked. Went to Yosemite one time. All we had is enough money for is $2 tires.
Hmm.
And, you know, every time we'd get a flat, we'd put the spare on, drive to the next gas station, fill up with gas, and buy another tire for $2. All the way to California on $2 tires. You can't do that now.
Dang.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That's amazing, though. I love that bit.
No, going to Yosemite in an old green Volkswagen Bug where you could see the asphalt as you were driving. You could look down under your feet and see the road.
There's a hole in the floorboard.
No heater. Going through Wyoming in January on I-80 and no defroster. My friend Earl Wiggins was holding the camp stove and we're all bundled up in sleeping bags as we're driving.
Mm.
Like, you're not just sitting there, you're in the sleeping bag driving and you're like this, and he's got the camp stove on the windshield for a defroster. And I just remember, I mean, really cold, and I could see him in the corner of my eye doing this, and all of a sudden Dad says, Jimmy, Earl fell asleep. He's sleeping bag's on fire. He fell asleep. He's sleeping bag caught on fire.
So what'd you do?
I don't remember. I probably just pulled over, and we dealt with it. But, you know, things like that. Yeah. It's not normal, is it?
Yeah, no, but that's amazing.
It's crazy stuff.
Oh, man. So what do you think was your first, like, climb that you did that you were like, okay, this is an accomplishment?
That's another good question. Well, my best climb, I don't know if it was the first thing that I did was cool, but the best one, I soloed a first ascent on El Capitan. You've heard of El Capitan?
Oh, yeah.
The big rock.
I went out to Yosemite a couple years ago.
So you saw it.
I've been trying to get back out there. It's incredible.
Did you see people on it?
I did. Yeah. I watched the free solo documentary as well, and it's incredible.
Yeah, the one I soloed was just maybe 50 feet or 40 feet or 30 feet left of that, but it took me 9 days.
9 days?
Yeah.
Okay, so 9 days. So what's going through your head as you're making that climb for 9 days?
Well, a lot led up to it.
Okay.
A lot.
Tell me about it.
Well, sure. Well, it was spring break. I was going to Cragmore, which is now UCCS. You know UCCS?
Yeah.
That was the beginning of UCCS. I was studying microbiology and archaeology and English, and we had a spring break. We're going out for an adventure, nice 9-10 day spring break, good time with your friends. Well, one of my friends had broken his leg in Rocky Mountain National Park. He was my partner.
Okay.
So we were going to do two parties of two, and my partner got broken. He had a broken leg, so I decided to team up with my other two buddies, and then we decided we're going to go to the Black Canyon. Then we thought, well, let's just go to Zion. It's a little further.
Okay.
Then we thought, well, let's just go to Yosemite. It's just a little further than that.
Yeah.
So, and then the crazy thing is, when I was studying, I met a guy who disappeared. He's a climber from California. He was in the Army, named Helmet. And a lot of my friends knew him. Some of my friends knew him, but he just disappeared. No one knows where he went. Hmm. But this was in 1972.
Okay.
And we were talking about lines in El Cap and first ascents. And we both agreed that there was this one that would maybe be a good first ascent. Back then, there were like seven total climbs in El Cap.
Okay.
Now there's maybe 150 lines.
Wow.
It's different. So as I'm studying in school, I'm looking at my in my notes, I had this picture of El Cap, and I'm sort of looking
at
it.
Had you been there yet before this?
Yeah, I had climbed. Okay. Yeah, I had climbed in 1970, I had climbed the nose. You've heard of the nose?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. It's a famous, maybe the most famous rock climb in the world, actually.
Yeah. And that one takes a long time as well, right? Typically.
Well, it depends. There's some speed records on it. And my friends that do speed records work on it for like maybe 50 times, 100. I mean, they live on it. They work on it.
Yeah.
But so I did that in 1970 with Andy Embick, who was a Rhodes Scholar.
Okay.
And then I did it. Then the next year I did the second ascent of the Heart Route, which is a big deal.
Okay.
And then I did the fifth ascent of the North American Wall, which at that time was called the hardest rock climb in the world.
Mm.
And the next year after that, in 72, is when I did El Cap. But what led up to it was, so we get out there, and I thought, well, as long as we're going out there, I might as well try this new route.
Yeah.
I got my friend Doug Snively. He was like 17 or 18. He was in high school.
Mm.
And then my other two friends were going to climb something else, Stuart Green and Bill. Stuart's written about 40 books now.
Oh, wow.
You probably, I don't know, you look him up, Stuart Green. He's written a lot of books. Maybe over 40. He's a great guy. And anyways, so I decided to climb try the new route with Doug Snively. I take that back. So I decided, Billy had changed his mind and wanted to climb with me, and Doug was going to climb with Stuart. So Billy and I started up, and Billy Westby, I held his hand the night he died of cancer about 10 years ago. So it was El Intenso. Yeah, I did spend a lot of my life with that guy. So we start up, and all of a sudden we hear a mob. There's people yelling, and I said, Billy, I think they're yelling at us.
Mm.
And there were maybe 8, 10, 12 climbers. You guys better get down. You're going to die up there. And they want to do the climb, and we're outsiders. And back then, people didn't really accept outsiders. It was sort of a close-knit group of people. It was different than it is now. So we kept going, and they kept screaming at us, if you make it to the top, we're going to meet you on top and throw you off. And I thought, Billy, these guys are really mad.
Yeah.
So Billy wanted to come down, so we came down. Mm. And then, then a friend of mine, Jim Dinini, who was a Green Beret, he's a good guy, and I said, you know, I don't think we should do it. These guys are really upset. And he said, they don't even want to do it. There's no interest in this thing. Go back up there. So Billy was bailed out. So Doug said, I'll go.
Mm.
So we go up there, and Dinini said, well, if they, I'll meet you on top.
Mm.
If they're there, I'll throw them off the top. It was kind of a deal because, you know, when you're threatened, and it wasn't lightly, they were screaming, they were going to get a gun and shoot us. We're going to go home and get a gun and shoot you. That's what they screamed at us.
So what climbing community were these guys from? Were they Californians?
They were local Californians, and I never met them.
Interesting.
So it was pretty intense. So Doug took a bad fall and broke three fingers in his right hand. There was blood all over the place. And pulled a big block off. And so we rappelled down. And I remember I told Doug this a couple times. I remember looking at him. We didn't talk. And all of a sudden he had tears running down his face. Mm. Not because he knew he was finished. He couldn't go because you know, he was so excited for a young kid. Mm. So then I knew I had to keep going. So I found another guy, Gordy Smale, a Canadian. He was the best Canadian climber. He had done all their cap routes. And he and I had talked about it first ascent the year before, but he had fallen 80 feet and hit the ground, broke his pelvis.
Wow.
That's real stuff.
This is all on the same trip, though. So, like, it was like 2 days ago.
This was a year before, okay, so he couldn't climb.
Okay.
So he couldn't, because I went back to New Hampshire, he couldn't climb. But then he was in South America healing, and he was hitchhiking back to Vancouver. Gordy, hey, man, I set up this new route. We talked, let's go do it. I talked him into it. And he took two falls and said, I don't want this. I'm out.
Mm, okay.
So then that's when I decided to solo it.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot went on. I didn't just say, well, I'm going to go solo a climb and it'll be great. Oh, no.
So it was just improvising a plan. You had the fire to climb it.
But I figured this. I have an old car, $115. I didn't have any money. I'd quit school. Hmm. I didn't have a job. I'm not leaving. And halfway up, I said, I'm never coming down. I'll die before I come down, which I wouldn't say now, but I said then.
Yeah.
So that's what led up to soloing it.
Pueblo Transit is partnering in the community for Zero Fare for Better Air, with events like Pueblo's Care and Share distribution on June 28th, July 26th, and August 23rd at Praise Assembly on Troy Avenue. Pueblo Transit is also providing special shuttles to Pueblo Pride on August 20th at Mineral Palace Park, and offering free service from downtown on Main Street to the Colorado State Fair from August 25th to the 31st. Zero Fare for Better Air is all summer long in June, July, and August. Let's get back in the episode.
So for people who maybe don't know a ton about climbing and how it works, so you mentioned that you're soloing it. What is that like to someone
who maybe
hasn't
hiked? That's a good question. Well, there's free soloing, which is what Honnell did.
And that's without a rope, correct?
Yeah, you just climb with your hands and feet.
Yeah.
And there's then there's rope solo, and you can rope solo free climbing. Hmm. The special devices are actually what some people, what I used to do is you tie the end of your rope into an anchor, then you pull up maybe 20 feet and tie into it. Hmm. You tie an overhand knot into your harness, and you climb till you get to the knot. Then it's kind of a hassle, actually. Hmm. Then you have to retie another knot, you know, pull up another 20 feet of rope. So what I did was I was soloing eight climbing, if people don't know what it is a type of climbing that usually there's not enough handholds and footholds to free climb with your hands and feet. Okay. So what you do, you have this cracks, and you put pitons. You put pitons in the cracks, or you put cliffhangers on little edges, or there might be a little nub, and you might put a sling around it. But what you do is you have a sling. It's called an etrier, a stirrup, and you clip the stirrup into the piece, and it's like a little ladder, and then you stand in rungs. And if it's when it's easy, it's easy, but. The trick behind aid climbing is a lot of times pitons go in this far, and you have to tie them off. And if you went like this, you could pull them out with your fingers.
Oh, man.
So you have to be really careful.
Yeah,
or
really make sure.
Or there'll be an edge. It won't be like that. It'll be like sloping. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful.
Wow.
There was a lot of that up there. A lot of tricky aid climbing that took me 18 hours to go 100 feet. A day and a half to go 100 feet once.
Yeah, because you're just trying to make sure everything is good. So I've been curious about this for people who do those long kind of climbs, because I've never done anything like that. I feel like whenever I do any sort of small thing, my adrenaline's just running like crazy. When you're doing long climbs like that, what's your adrenaline levels like during
the night? That's another. These are great questions. Well, I think it's sort of slow motion. And, you know, I never spent that much time alone in my life where I was actually talking to the rock. But it was normal. It wasn't like...
What were you saying?
I was apologizing for thinking I could get up it.
Wow.
And because I thought, this is much harder than I thought. And then I thought, a guy named Burrell Robbins, who was the most influential climber in the history of North American climbing, he failed on it. He didn't do it. And he was like the most qualified in the whole world to do it. And Jim Birdwell was also the most qualified. There were a couple, few climbers that were, they were much better than me, I thought. And I said, why didn't they do this? They have telescopes, they have binoculars. What do they know that I don't know? Why am I up here? So I started talking to the rock. I started talking to my haul bag, it was a person. And it's, you know, it's not like...
Your
bag
with, like, your food and your water.
Yeah,
and stuff,
so
like
it's
that.
Not like... Yeah. It's not like, you know, like I'm talking to you. It's not like... you know, you don't think at the time, oh, this is weird.
Sure.
It's normal. It's just like me talking to you now.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like you don't think it's out of the step. And I was talking to insects, asking how they were doing. You know, it was, and it was just normal.
Yeah.
Everything was normal.
Hmm. So how did you sleep up there? Or did you?
I slept a little bit. I dropped my sleeping bag.
Okay.
The first day. Actually, I have what's called a half bag. A half bag comes up to your waist. It's like a half a sleeping bag, so it's lighter. Then you use the top part as your down jacket. So instead of having a down jacket and a sleeping bag, you have a half bag for weight. I dropped the half bag. So and then my hammock, I had a two suspension hammock that you would, so the wall was like this and like that.
Okay.
It was so steep in places that you would let the haul bag out, it would fly out 25 or 30 feet in space, like almost to the end of this room. That's how steep it was. So my hammock ripped, so I slept in an army duffel bag.
Your hammock ripped?
Yeah. So I slept standing up in a, like, imagine this, the wall, just clipping the duffel bag off.
Yeah.
Sleeping in it, just standing up.
Wow.
So you don't, it gets kind of weird because all your weight, you know, sleeping standing up is kind of awkward. Because you're not
can't
really...
can't say I've ever done it before. That's awesome.
I haven't done it since. But it's like, you know, you're tired and, you know, you have no choice.
Yeah.
The biggest ledge in 2,000 feet was probably this big. So there are no ledges.
Sure.
So you just sleep by standing up and you sort of change positions and you get feet get numb. And
I've been interested in climbing for probably since I was in Yosemite and saw those climbers. So I bought some binoculars and we came back and so we sat down. You know, there's that little like prairie at the base.
The meadows.
So like I brought my camping chair out there with my buddies. And so we watched them for about 3 or 4 hours watching them.
It's a deal, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. It's like... It's so crazy cool to me. Like, yeah, I was reading some stuff about it. Just like, there was this quote that I saw. It was like, people who do climbing like that, their brains aren't the same as the people who stand on the bottom. Because like I can't imagine myself doing that.
Well, like Ashley, you know, you just work your way up to it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, and it's not for everybody, and but. You know, looks like you're in pretty good shape to me.
I appreciate that.
And this is really interesting. There's a lady named Lorraine, and she actually knew a lot of my friends from the early 70s, and her grandson is my son's very good buddy.
Okay.
They're both about the same age, and her daughter, who I didn't know at all, but she was hanging out with some friends of mine. So I met Emily, Lorraine's daughter. Then Emily said, well, my mother watched you climb El Cap in 1972. So now Lorraine and I are good buddies. We talk about...
That's crazy.
Because, you know,
small world.
It's a really small world because there's not many of us. When I talked to her, she spent 5 years there. Both the seasons were spring and fall. People would go there in April and May, then they come back in September and October, like lemmings. They would just migrate there. It was like, and you couldn't stop. It was addicting. And she knows how addicting it was. Then she ended up where her best friend Diana Honey died, and she told me, like, Diana was much better climber than me. If she can die, I could die. So she quit. But anyways, I said, well, 5 years ago, I said, you know, Lorraine, I never asked anybody this. What was it like watching me from the meadow? She said, it was pretty wild. There was like several hundred people. And people came there just because nobody believed you were up there. They just came there to see if it was true. They heard stories.
Yeah.
And then she said there was a lot of jealousy, a lot of envy, a lot of pissed off people that you were doing it, and a lot of admiration from some people. So it was pretty wild.
What do you think they were pissed off about?
Because I was an outsider, I think.
You still think that's such an interesting...
Oh, yeah, I know for sure.
That's such an interesting thing to me. Do you feel like the community's like that nowadays? Or do you think that's kind of gone away?
Maybe some places.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's interesting.
The Yosemite's different. I don't think it's like that in Yosemite, but not at all. But it was then. In fact, when I came down, I left all my gear on top because it was like my hand. I remember trying to close my hands. I couldn't even close them. They were all swollen. And
yeah.
I came down, left my gear, and it was a hassle getting down, but I made it finally. And the first guy I saw turned out to be best buddies, but he had put the word out, if anybody went up on this climb, he was going to break their arms and legs, because he was trying it, and he was like the king of Yosemite.
Dang.
Named Jim Birdwell.
For that path that you had planned for?
He tried it, and he was really good,
and
he was the first person I saw. I said, oh, shit. And here he is. He came up to you, shook my hand. I'm impressed. And he cooked you supper.
Oh, that's cool. Well, so, yeah, so let's back up just a little bit. So... Let's go back to you're on the climb, you're working your way up. Do you remember any moments that you were like, okay, I may need to turn around or I might get stuck up here, or was it all go?
Oh, no.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's great questions. So, one time I thought, I was talking to a cap, apologizing. I was thinking, why did these Yosemite guys do this? They're really good. They're super good climbers, but they failed on it. So what am I doing up here? So I remember. So I'm on the wall like this, right? But when I look down, the wall went this way, so the trees were way underneath me.
Oh, interesting. You know, so
I was hanging like this, but in other words, I was way out in space. And the trees were like, imagine, like right now, you look straight down, but the trees were that way. And I was thinking, I shouldn't even be here.
Wow.
But it was too late.
So that means that you were like looking up at the wall then, correct? Because you're saying that it was coming up.
Yeah, it was really steep.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I thought, I was sort of committed. There was no, I didn't think I could get down. In other words, if I load the rope down, instead of if it's vertical, the rope's here, you can get back on the wall, the rope's like 30 feet out in space. So you'd have to do some tricky stuff, like down aided, and it was, it wasn't happening. See, that was a good question, but
So you just kept going through that.
I just kept going.
That's crazy.
And the first, these are little tidbits of things I remember. The first thing that The very first thing I, when I got to the top, I didn't realize I had solar the first Sentinel cap. I didn't even think about it. It didn't even, it wasn't a plan, and it didn't, I didn't think of it. Then the first thing I saw was a peregrine falcon.
Awesome.
No people, just a peregrine looking at me. I thought, this is cool. And then I said, wait a minute. I just soloed a first Sentinel cap. Then I walked into a tree.
You walked into a tree?
A tree branch. And then, it got me back to my senses.
That's crazy. So when you reach the top, what is that feeling?
That was a great relief. Oh, yeah. That was like I said, I got to the top, and it was a battle getting to, because I wasn't sure how to get up there once I got to this big ledge, like 2,500 feet up. And then I was looking for different ways to go, and I wasn't sure. My hands, I was really tired, super tired. My hands, I fell one time, and I grabbed a rope. I remember opening my left hand like that, and I saw blood dripping out of all my fingers, dripping. it was a hassle. And towards the end, I couldn't even do this.
Oh, my gosh. So how do you go from, what was it like going from that, like, big accomplishment, you know, crazy, like, nine-day adventure like that back into regular life?
Well, I didn't go back to school. I got invited to on trips to like the Himalayas, and they want. I got invited to be the guest speaker in New York City.
Wow!
All kinds of things, but I didn't do any. I didn't even write a description to a climb. Like if you and I did a 5-pitch climb any place, mm-hmm. you might write a description of what it's called a topo.
Okay.
And that would be the first part is this hard, it's rated this.
Mm. So you if someone else wants to climb that route.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't even write a topo to it.
Mm.
I didn't even write it. I didn't even name it. Mm. Jim Birdwell talked to me, the guy that was going to break my arms and legs.
Yeah.
He was impressed. And he said, what are you going to name it? I have no idea. People are telling me, name it nicely done, well done. Mm. All these people are throwing names at me. I said, I don't really care. So Birdwell, I said, well, Jim, what are you going to call it? I was going to call it Cosmos.
Hmm.
Let's call it Cosmos. So I let him name it. He was psyched.
Oh, that's nice. Did he ever do it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Nice. Well, that's still cool, though. Do you know how many people at this point have...
Not that many. I know people have been rescued on it. One guy broke his back on it.
Hmm.
There's been some issues up there.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the weather like for that climb when you were doing it?
It was cold.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in it. It was May. It was cold.
Mm.
It was. I climbed the whole way with a big expedition jacket.
Mm.
You know, big fluffy jacket. Never took it off.
Yeah,
it was cold. It was cold.
That's crazy.
But it didn't rain.
Mm. So, do you feel like that was your most dangerous climb that you've ever done? Do you have other climbs?
I don't know if it's most dangerous, but it was the best one that I did.
Mm.
Yeah.
I was reading some stuff about your Black Canyon climbs as well. What's special about the Black Canyon in Gunnison?
Yeah, well, it's pretty awesome. The rock is big and wild, and it was always kind of lonely down there and quiet, and rivers roaring, and I've done a few things that were a little on the dangerous side, I'd say.
Well, that's really cool. Well, yeah, so I love that, you know, you were able to make that climb and just all of those stories. I mean, talk to me about, like, you've mentioned a lot of your friends as we've been chatting about some of the climbs you've done and people that you've talked about. Like, what was your community like whenever you were doing these climbs and in that season of your life, and really all of it?
Well, we had in Colorado Springs, there was a really great bunch of folks that were super motivated, and climbing pretty much meant everything to them. There was a list from Dan McClure and Billy Westbay and Cito and Stuart Green, and then later Earl Wiggins, and there were some very talented climbers. And some people say that the group in Colorado Springs, I've heard this lately, that they had some of the best ethics and they're most motivated climbers. But I know there were some in Boulder that were very motivated and very talented. There were some in Yosemite. But there weren't as many outcrops of climbers, like, scattered like there is now.
Interesting. What do you mean by that? Like, is there just
Well, now this climbing is... I think there's about 7 million climbers in the United States now.
Wow.
And some are, like, maybe 14, like, high 14ers or some scramble, but they're all climbers and... to some extent.
Yeah.
And back then, it was like you'd go to Goodwill to buy a pair of climbing pants, 50 cents. There'd be dress pants for 50 cents a pair. Climbing shoes were $12 a pair. You might spend $100 to $200 a pair now. Climbing pants are $180.
Yeah, sure.
You know, loose climbing pants. I know. There was this thing is there were knickers, but I never heard the word climbing pants. We'd get painter's pants, white painter's pants.
Yeah.
For a few dollars, like $5 a pair, whatever they were.
How do you feel about the state of climbing right now? And the climbers that you see and just the way that people are doing what they're doing?
Well, I can't believe how strong everybody is.
Mm.
Like, they're super fit. Super strong, and it's great to see all these young climbers out there. My son is 18. He hasn't climbed a lot, but he's like two or three grades ahead of me already. He's only climbed. Yes, you know, he's just getting into climbing, and I was kind of thinking, to be honest, that that I was saying, maybe you shouldn't get into climbing. It's too dangerous.
For your son?
And, yeah, so he's been doing good. But, I mean, these, like, all these young climbers are getting really fit, super fit.
What's it like to see your son doing the climbing?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's wonderful. he's just starting. He's just, you know, he does a lot of flipping. You know, he's really good at flipping. I think that's helping his legs, and he's getting really strong. So, and he likes it. It's awesome seeing him. That's a good question.
That's cool.
I think, you know, the gyms, you know, in the late 70s, I broke my ankle. You see my left ankle? It doesn't move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See the difference? I broke it ice climbing. And I was the director of a climbing school in New Hampshire. So I thought, well, I better stay in shape. So I built, I'm above my office on the third floor of this big, fancy 150-year-old building. In the attic, I built a climbing gym. The French Canadians called it the Gymnasium, and I called it the Torture Chamber. I think it was the first climbing gym in the United States, maybe the only one.
Wow.
And now they're every place. It's like, you know, but it was really primitive. But so we'd work out there all the time and get in shape and have a good time. And I was just in Salt Lake City not long ago, and there's three gyms that are, like, massive. And the guy that owns them is building a fourth gym. Like, they're massive. They're so elaborate. They're like... Like when you go into them, they're like going into looks like artworks. They're like everything is the way it's set up, all the formations and colors. It's like, and all these people look like they're ripped with muscles. All these, like, you know, 50 or 100 women just ripped and working out, and like it's like army of samurai warriors. It's like wild.
Army of samurai warriors. I like that.
It's almost like that. It's wild.
What have you seen from the Pueblo climbing community?
Well, there was some people that I knew back 45 years ago called the Pueblo Gringos. And they were an isolated group down here. And I met Warren Banks back then. And I saw Warren 4 days ago for the first time in like 45 years.
Oh, cool.
And he was, I think he was part of that group. And there's a there's a shop called On the Edge River. Do you know that shop?
I think
his name is Bob. Do you know him?
I don't know if I do, but
Well, anyways, he, I don't know if he was part of that climbing group, but he knows a bunch of those folks. And and I don't know, I've been meeting, well, some of my friends from the Springs have been doing, they've been coming down here for 20 years. So I'm not exactly sure about the local climbers here. But I know there's some doing their thing.
So if... Let's say that there's someone maybe 15, 16 years old who's listening to this that's hearing you talk about climbing. What would you tell them should they start climbing?
If they should or why they should?
Yeah.
I don't know. Be careful. Super careful.
How?
And always get an education. I quit college 3 times ago climbing. So I would tell them, make sure you get a good education. You can be a journalist.
Yeah.
And still climb, but get an education. And that's what I would say.
How do you be careful. How do you go about learning how to climb? Or how did you learn how to do the technical parts of climbing?
I went to a cave club meeting at what now is the Wells Fargo Bank building. It was a bank then. It was in the basement.
Okay.
And... It was called Splunker's Grotto Club. And I thought, wow, this sounds exciting. So I went there, and they were talking about you need to learn how to rappel, which is slide down the rope, and you need how to use ascenders, ascend up ropes.
Yeah.
And the ascenders back then were made in England. They're called Jumars. They're made for bird watchers. You know, they have little cams. You'd have them hooked to your body, and you'd slide it up, and it would just, the cams would lock into place. So you could just lean back, and then you slide the other one up, and you could just, like, walking up a ladder. So yeah, I had to learn that, and I didn't know it. So this one guy said, well, I'll teach you. And I just quit. I just turned 16. I'd quit high school, and I bought a 1966 Corvette Stingray 427 turbojet convertible.
That's awesome.
It was crazy. It was too much. It was my first car. But... anyways, I soon outgrew that when I started climbing. That's enough of that. So I went over to the guy's house, and I called and said, listen, let's not do it tomorrow. Let's do it now. It was 11 o'clock at night. Mm. So I went over to his house and did it in a big tree in his backyard. I didn't want to wait. I know, it's pretty crazy.
I love it, man.
Yeah. That's how I started. But, you know, there's the best thing, if you have someone that you're friends with and they take you out, that's the best. Mm. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually taken a bunch of friends out that turned out to be really good climbers that were just totally beginners, or I guess there's lots of climbing schools around. You can do the climbing school, and you can just go out by yourself with a friend, but you got to be careful.
Sure.
There's a lot of ways you can make a mistake. It's so easy to do something funky. You know, my son and his friend Wesley were climbing the Garden of the Gods about a month ago, and they were climbing on one of the rocks that you can't get down, you have to rappel. It was dark when they got to the top, and they weren't even sure how to get down. And I was thinking, you guys got to be careful. I mean, you got to be really careful. You're up on this rock. You don't know if the rope's long enough to get down. It's dark out. You got to be careful.
So you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, just kind of bringing it back, that there was a season of time where Helen was supporting you and you guys were going to all a bunch of spots to climb. You were just living out of your van or RV.
We mostly had Volkswagen vans.
Yeah.
White Volkswagen vans. And sometimes later we had a Ford van.
Yeah. Well, tell me what that was like, having Helen supporting you like that.
I mean, it was great. I was, you know, most of her friends were artists and musicians in England.
Yeah.
And then when she said she wanted to be a climber, I said, really, you want to be a climber? Then later she said, boy, your climbing friends are the nicest people I ever met. I want to be a climber. Really? So we just climbed for almost 8 to 10 years. And she's actually better. She was better then at the end than I am now.
Really?
Things that she could up then, I can't get up now. She did really good.
Wow.
She did well, I should say. Yeah, it was impressive.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so I feel happy to support her in our art. When she's around Gregory and Jeff and whatever it takes, I'm there to support her.
What kind of art does she do?
Well, she's been doing some performance art at Blowback and at CSU. She did a really cool project. Gregory was there and Jeff were there, and they both were very impressed. And she's also done, her favorite thing is sculptures, big, heavy, giant rocks. You know, she likes, her favorite thing is, that she likes vehicles is a big truck and big lumps of rock, big, huge lumps of rock, like thousands of pounds. And she likes sculpting big rocks.
That's cool.
Yeah, she loves it. And so then she's been doing some pottery lately, but she mostly likes sculpting. But it's not, you know, some of those things might take 2 years to do.
Yeah. That's cool, though. I mean, that's another similar, like, the way for climbing, you got to take your time and watch every step and do everything. That's another, you have to be very patient to do that kind of art.
And now, you know, because I'm in Pueblo and I have my own space, I can work on stories, which I'm doing. I have scanners. I have lots of climbing pictures that I saved. You know, that, you know, one of my friend Ed, who you read the article, he went through, last time I saw him, he spent 3 days in our house in Colorado Springs going over my slides. He said, James, you have the best collection of slides I've ever seen. He started labeling them. He said, someday people are going to say, wow, my handwriting's on your slides. So I have all these killer slides of people, and I have good memory of what we did. And so I have a pretty good position to take my time and write some good, you know, I don't know if I'm that good at it, but I have a good memory for what I did. So I'm going to at least start, I'm writing it down. I've written maybe 5 or 6 so far.
Nice.
I've got maybe, I can do 10 more maybe.
Are you thinking that they'll be somewhere where somebody can, like, go and read them, or?
That's what I'm hoping to, a book.
Great, okay, cool.
I never thought about doing it, but if I don't, and all that, those individual things are not written, and does it matter?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, a lot of times when I go places, people ask me about things I did.
Yeah.
So,
I'd be interested.
Yeah, thanks.
If you got that going, I would definitely read that.
So I think, yeah, if I don't do it, it's a mistake. I have all these pictures I saved. Mm. I keep them in a safe. Mm. If I had $100,000, I'd leave it on the table. If I get my slides, I keep it in the safe. Mm. They're more important than money to me. Mm. I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
No, that makes total sense. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's wonderful to be here. Mm. The buildings in Pueblo, since you're from here, the old buildings are like stunning.
Yeah.
Have you seen some, have you paid attention to some of the buildings?
Yeah.
They are stunning. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually been stopping and going in some, looking at the inside lately.
Yeah.
They're stunning. I have pictures on my phone. Mm. I sent them to friends. You guys won't believe these buildings in Pueblo.
Yeah. It's such an interesting place. I totally agree. So I grew up in Rye, you know, just half hour south. So people in Rye typically like say like Pueblo is like a boring city. That's kind of like the vibe that you get in Rye, because we're all mountain people. And then when I came up here for college, I had the same kind of thought, you know, and it's just been, Pueblo's got this really rich and unique history.
Well, apparently it was going to be the capital of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah, then the flood hit.
The flood, and then Pueblo, you know, didn't quite catch up to Denver at that point. But but it's a... It's also a lot of growth right now, which is really cool. So,
it's exciting, and there's some really interesting people that in my wife's art world is like, you know, I'm in the back burner, but I like being around it.
Yeah,
I love when I'm talking to Gregory. It's always exciting, or Jeff. Oh, yeah. It's really exciting. It's super exciting. I don't know what this is.
For sure.
It has nothing to do with climbing. It's just exciting. Mm. So I'm glad I'm part of it.
That's cool.
And then if I can spend a little bit of time getting in some sort of shape, do some climbs with my son, and write some stories, and...
Well, we're really glad you chose Pueblo as a place to do all that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's awesome.
And hey, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Mm. Yep. Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, man. Dude, I really appreciate this. This is one of my favorite conversations I think I've had. So, thank you for spending the time with me, Jimmy.
Yeah, anytime.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been Voices of Pueblo, brought to you by the Pueblo Star Journal. If you want to check out the entire article that I wrote on this, you can find it at pueblostarjournal.org or in our most recent edition of the newspaper in print. If you want to connect with Jimmy, we'll put some spots to connect with him on our article, and we'll go from there. So for Ben and Jimmy, have a great rest of your day.
Zero Fare for Better Air is happening with Pueblo Transit all summer long in June, July, and August. Ride Pueblo Transit or City Lift free throughout the hot summer months. Leave the car at home, enjoy one of 12 routes offered throughout the city, and help save carbon emissions during the hottest time of the year. Need help finding a route? Call Pueblo Transit at 719-553-2723 or visit the website at www.pueblo.us. This podcast is brought to you by the City of Pueblo.